Welcome to Leaders and Legends of Online Learning, a podcast dedicated to the experts. Thank you for listening. Each episode, we'll be learning from the world's leading thinkers and practitioners in online learning and linking to ideas relevant to online teaching, working with online learners, and digital education. You can listen to the experts and check their profiles and link to some of their work on our website, www.onlinelearninglegends.com. I'm Mark Nichols, the interviewer in this episode. You'll meet distinguished Professor Emeritus Michael G. Moore in this episode. Professor Moore's work on transactional distance provides us with one of the founding theories of distance education and online learning, and his dedicated efforts over the last 50 years continue to inform and inspire practitioners and theorists. Michael and I talked via Zoom. I'm privileged to be talking with Distinguished Professor Emeritus of Education at the Pennsylvania State University, Michael G. Moore, who I'm certain for many listeners will not need a further introduction. Professor Moore continues to make a gargantuan contribution to distance and online education, and I fear that trying to list even a few of them will reduce our interview time. Michael, thank you for your time today.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for your invitation. Thank you for those kind words of welcome.
Michael, can we start with a brief overview of your career and publications?
A brief, for sure. I got my degree in economics at London School of Economics and trained as a teacher. I mention the training as a teacher because I was and am a qualified teacher, and I taught high school. And then way back 1963, I had an appointment to teach in Kenya and East Africa, and my career in distance education began there in about 1964. Hmm. I repeat 1964, so, you know, I've spent my whole academic professional life in distance and adult education. After 7 years in Africa, I was offered a job at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, and that turned out to be one of the most important events in my life because it took me to work with the father of modern distance education, Charles Wedemeyer, who I hope everybody knows, and if not, I urge you really must know the work of Charles Wedemeyer. In Madison, this is the 1970s, I learned to teach on the telephone, which was the first synchronous teaching technology, and moved myself into a doctoral program. And I found that in the literature, there was no scholarly research or theory about this kind of teaching that by then I'd been doing for 7 or 8 years. Mm. There was not even a definition about that kind of teaching. So I set myself to uncover what were the broad dimensions of that field of practice, and I proposed a theory about that practice, the practice of teaching and learning when teachers and learners are in different places. Later on, that became called the theory of transactional distance. The idea of transaction from Dewey came from one of my academic advisors back then in Madison in the 70s. And the broad dimensions were the structure of the program, the dialogue between teachers and learners, and the role of the learner, especially the role of the learner in managing his or her learning, which Charles Wedemeyer called independent learning. I referred to it as learner autonomy. I was much influenced by the humanistic psychologists, people like Carl Rogers and Abraham Maslow, and Malcolm Knowles, probably the biggest name in writing a theory of adult education, which he called andragogy. And the term distance education, I actually got that from Bori Holmberg, the Swedish theoretician, pioneer, actually taught in German, and on a visit to Madison, Wisconsin, in conversation, he used the term Fernstudium. I said, what's that? He said, distance learning, distance teaching. I said, aha, that's the term I've been looking for. I've been looking for the right terminology. So that's where that term came from. So when I put that out at a conference in Washington in 1972, that was the first time that the concept of distance education had been introduced into the American literature. At that time, there was no theory. I think most of my work subsequently has been, you know, the primary impact has been in the country where I've been working, which is here in the States. So in the 80s, I came back to the U.S., having been in both Canada and U.K. for a number of years, And I was offered a job at Pennsylvania State University. And I jumped into the opportunity to experiment with groups in different locations using the audiographic, which was the early linking of computers through phone lines to audio through phone lines, and then video conferencing, and then ultimately computer conferencing. What I did quite consciously, and it's in the record, I consciously set out to establish distance education as a field of academic study and research. There was no literature. I had to use European articles and journals back in the early days. And so I started the American Center for Study of Distance Education as a national center for research and scholarship. And I organized conferences. I started the first American research journal, which was the American Journal of Distance Education. And I started the first online network, or what nowadays we call a community of practice, which was the Distance Education Online Symposium. And I started the first graduate courses, teaching in courses about distance education. And all that eventually led in the mid-1990s to my being invited in at the top leadership at the university. Eventually, those conversations led to the establishment of our outreach program, which we call the World Campus. So that was my career over 30 years at Penn State. And together that, with a lot of consulting and training, evaluation and so on, that took me around the world, including periods of time with the World Bank, where I worked full-time for a few years, and other international and national organizations. And in your question, you said about publications, I would say the Handbook of Distance Education, which is now, we've just published the fourth edition, so I think first was around 2005, and the textbook, because again, when I started teaching graduate courses, there was no textbook, so I wrote with a colleague Distance Education, a Systems View, which I've forgotten, I think where that's the fourth edition and really now needs revision into a fifth, and that was published into four different languages as well as English. And my main publication work, which I work on almost every day, continues to be the American Journal of Distance Education, because that comes out four times a year. And I just had a report from our publisher last year. The number of download articles was over 40,000. I'm not writing a lot of original material. I'm kind of managing, I hope I'm facilitating and managing the work of the generation or two behind me through both the handbook and the American Journal. So I think that's, let me stop there.
Well, thank you. And thank you too for being able to bring it down so briefly. I have to admit that the two works that you've mentioned, the transactional model of distance education and also the book you wrote with Greg Kearsley, that was the Systems View, have been very influential in my own thinking too in distance education. So thank you for laying that foundation. Michael, it's interesting considering the relationship between distance education and online education, and I'm really interested to just probe your thoughts on that. Do you see online as a natural extension of distance education, or how do you see those two things relating?
Of course, you know, audiographic or video conferencing or computer conferencing or online communications, online teaching, they're the communication technologies that are used. As I've said in the guide to authors for the American Journal, we will review articles about teaching and learning in which the learners and the teacher are in separate places or separate times, that is distance education, through any technology, but can't remember the exact wording, but the guidelines to authors says something like the contemporary medium of distance education is known variously as online learning, e-learning, those two terms particularly. So yes, online learning is the latest and possibly the last technological manifestation. I mean, we can see how online learning takes different forms and may take forms yet to be imagined. But essentially, they are the communication technologies through which distance education is provided. Distance education, as a theory and a body of knowledge, embraces what we know and what we need to know, that is research about learners and the conditions under which they learn and the various multi-factors of learning, the multi-factors of teaching, and of the organization and management and policy issues with regard to the multi-factors of teaching and learning. So distance education itself is the broad umbrella under which a whole range of sub-disciplines are found. You know, and online is the means of communication through which all this happens.
Yeah, it's been a very interesting theme, actually, the podcast to date. Many interviewees have expressed quite a strong foundation in distance education, which has certainly enriched their online education experience.
That's very encouraging. It does suggest that you've handpicked, as I expect you have, your interviewees, because I think if you were to take a random sample of people who are currently teaching online, that would not be a good description. The majority of people do not have that broader understanding that I've referred to, that you've reinforced, I suspect is because you've picked knowledgeable people. But most people aren't knowledgeable.
Yeah, it's been very interesting too, that the way that the interviewees have consistently gone back to the same theorists. I mean, Holmberg, for example, has been mentioned multiple times. I mean, that those ideas that have underpinned distance education across decades still seem to be very, very relevant and pertinent to practice in online education today.
There are two people that I consider the most significant in our field, if legend is the right term. And one is Charles Wedemeyer, and the other is Otto Peters. But I have to say that Holmberg's was never did not have the significance in theory that Peters did, or I think indeed transactional distance has. He certainly was head and shoulders above the rest of his generation in providing leadership. I kind of almost like political leadership, I suppose I'd have to say. He was a vice president and president of IPDE, and he wrote the first bibliography. So that was really his big contribution. Before Holmberg, I don't think anyone had conceptualized the idea of having a bibliography, which in a way was a major foundation for the argument that we have a scholarship, that we have a whole domain of research and scholarship. So he laid a big foundation with his bibliographies. His theory, you know, the internal didactic conversation is of some value, but I don't consider it ranks at the level that Otto Peters with his, I prefer to say, systems model. He called it originally, I think, the industrialized model, and that doesn't sound good. Those are just some thoughts from a person who's known them both for, well, that conversation I had with Holmberg was, again, back there in the 70s.
Michael, I wonder if you can comment about how you view online education and learning at the present time. So it's mid-2019. You've got many decades of observation and history to draw from. Where are we at, do you think, in terms of our practice? Which direction is it going?
I've seen a major change in the general perspective about distance learning. There's probably no college or... Well, here, let me just speak here in North America for a moment. The distance education in the online form is not accepted in concept. Back at the beginning of my time, it was in higher education, it was a fairly preposterous idea that people not in a classroom could learn or could possibly learn as well if they weren't in the classroom. The idea that could learn at a distance, let alone learn well at a distance, was, I repeat the word, preposterous. So that has changed the whole generation today. accepts the idea that people can be learning at home, they can be learning on the train, and so on. So that's a big improvement in education, and specifically in higher education. And interestingly, we have seen improvements in the quality of teaching on the campus as a result of the challenge that teachers, faculty, academics have faced as they've struggled to teach at a distance online. I remember when the first learning management systems came in, I was grateful because the LMS, they took to teachers in conventional classroom some of the demands for quality design that I would have been preaching for decades. They kind of really pushed it to faculty on a large scale. We're using a system called Canvas at Penn State. Before that, we were using, was it Angel? And there's Blackboard and the others. When a professor goes or teacher goes in there now, one of the first things that he or she sees is, what are your objectives? Well, 30 years ago, you couldn't get academics to write down the outcomes for their teaching. So there's been an improvement in the numbers of people that are able to learn now because of the acceptance of online, and there is an improvement in the quality of teaching generally. Now, having said that, I think it's time that we faced up to the need for more systematic education and training of persons in higher education in the job of teaching. On this side of the Atlantic, I'm not sure how much around the world, but I welcome what's being referred to as the badges movement. I think the quality of everything that we do will get a boost when we break the link between the institution that teaches and the institution that certifies. And I think the universities, they resist losing this monopoly of certification, but that, what's the expression? That horse has already left the stable or something, because there are independent training providers in this country, certainly, who are developing their own badges or certification credentials, which are beginning to take hold. Udacity, one of the first of the MOOCs to go towards career-oriented courses are giving what they call nano degrees, and people can build up a personalized portfolio, and employers are beginning to value this as compared to the classical traditional 4-year degree. These new credentials are evidence of very marketable immediate skills and knowledge. I think that's an important trend. The basic fact is that for online to be fully effective, there has to be a further change from the idea of teaching as an individual craft. And in the name of our textbook, there has to be thinking of teaching as a system, going back to Otto Peters and Charles Wedemeyer, who a lot of his writing was about teaching as a system, and indeed the UK Open University, for which Wedemeyer was the principal consultant, they institutionalized teaching as a system. And most of our higher education institutions still haven't been able to really bite the bullet on that. And it's a tough one politically. It's to do with the distribution of money, and especially who to hire, and the balance of faculty, in the American sense, professors, academics, against other employees, like instructional designers and software and other technologies. So that means a whole different business model, and it's a challenge for our institutions. My institution's done a pretty good job, not all I would like it to, but by setting up their world campus, they have in fact set a whole separate institution where resources are managed on a better systems model, while the rest of the university continues very much in a traditional higher education model with online attached. It's much easier for new institutions. I was in Chile, where one of the institutions I was visiting, they've got coast to coast, or in that very, very elongated country, and from north to south coverage, with minimal buildings, minimal full-time employees, a much heavier balance of technology and instructional design, excellent cadre of student support people, and a much smaller number of traditional academics. So getting that switch over is a decades-long journey, and we've made progress, but we've got a way to go yet.
Well done. I'm incredibly glad you mentioned that, actually, and I was going to probe it, because how online education, distance education, is expressed in a university is to a very large extent determined by the operating model. So it becomes a managerial decision, if you like, in terms of how all of that progresses. So you mentioned earlier about helping academics upskill or become a lot more effective online teachers. That really is an operating model or systems issue, isn't it?
It is, and we have technologies, and we know how to use technologies. We know enough about the pedagogies, and I just referred to myself, you know, from learning about how to set a set of learning objectives and structure a program of learning within a student's budget of time. I mean, that was a fundamental, simple principle of correspondence education 60 years ago. We have the technologies, and we have knowledge about pedagogy is not universally known, but the knowledge exists. The problem is the one that you've just touched upon, which is the management of the resources to implement those policies. But beyond that, the big problem, and I think if we talk about research, I can't say much more than to say I think this is the most under-researched area, and it's the most problematic area, is to do with policy. If I talk about the United States, you know, being a federation at federal level, at state level, at institutional level, you can't use the technology and you can't use all that we know about the pedagogy if you don't have the structures in the institution. And to get those changed, you have to have policy leadership, which is woefully missing. But I won't blame the policy people too much, because we aren't doing the research that informs them sufficiently to take on the tough challenge of allocating budgets, human resources differently than they traditionally do, differently than is safe. So administration, management, organizational change, policy, those are the areas where we're woefully lacking in knowledge.
In fact, the next question I had for you is the sorts of research you would like to see. And you've got a very privileged position, of course, on that, being the editor of the American Journal of Distance Education for so long, plus also your foundational work in distance education. So, Michael, if I was to give you an unlimited budget to spend on research activity, where would you invest it at the moment?
It's organizational change. Institution-less or virtual systems are more efficient and more effective, but our challenge is that we have to reconfigure the institutions, many of which have been around for 100 or more years. That is a horrendously difficult political problem. I believe in the idea, in the concept of pilot projects and demonstration projects. So I would spend money on attempting to demonstrate the viability of virtual systems that met 21st century lifelong learning needs using the established institutions, but beyond what can be done within the confines of established institutions. As I speak, it's paradoxical, you know, online breaks out of the walls of the established institutions, but administratively, organizationally, we still provide through the campuses, inside the walls. I must say, you know, you referred to being editor, and as editor, the vast majority of articles that I receive are to do with teaching and learning. Most of them are descriptive studies, and they don't get accepted. They're kind of action research or evaluation studies. People send reports about student performance or student satisfaction or student attitudes or faculty attitudes, faculty yeah. experiences. I can't remember the last time we had an article on policy. We occasionally have articles on management, but not very often. There's not much systematic research done in either the policy or management areas. I'm thinking about the Handbook of Distance Education as I speak, because we divided the 40-odd chapters into theory and history, learning and learners, management and administration, and audiences. You know, what's going on in the community colleges, what's going on in the for-profit sectors and so on. But one area that we don't get much research on is the history. And it's not only because I started life in high school teaching history. There's been one dissertation done on Charles Wedemeyer himself, but nobody has done a systematic study of his, you know, his historic project, which was called the Articulated Instructional Media Project, which is where he first proved the viability of a systems approach to teaching. Most people don't even know about it. That goes back to my point earlier. I would like everybody who's going to teach an online course to have some teaching first, the kind of course I used to teach at Penn State. Say, well, look, you know, read about Wedemeyer and the Articulated Instructional Media Project, because if you don't have that foundation, you're just tinkering, you know, with the online technology, but you haven't got the fundamental philosophy, let alone the pedagogy. So I'd like to see more historical research, more research in organizational and especially in policy issues. More research on teaching and learning is always welcome, but that's what everybody's doing. One of the emerging trends that I find very interesting and promising is the return to the focus on the independent or individual learner, which nowadays is being referred to as personalized learning. Yeah. And that was that other dimension in my original theory. It's now labeled and so on, discussed a little differently. But I think that is really important trend. With the emergence of the interactive technologies around the turn of the century and a little bit before that, the pendulum, in my opinion, bear in mind, I said I experimented with audio conferencing probably before anybody. I had groups of people in Europe as well as in Latin America and the US, so I don't take back seat to anyone in my value of the synchronous communication technologies and the pedagogy of teaching through synchronous communications. But I think the pendulum swung too far that way. So many people were so excited that you could teach just as if, in their view, you were in a classroom through the technology, that the pendulum swung too far away from what had been the paradigm, really, in correspondence education, which had been one-to-one teaching and learning. That's why Wedemeyer called it independent learning. So instead of one-to-one, we went to one-to-many and many-to-many, and constructivist pedagogy became the hot topic of the decade. And we went far too far in that direction. And so I'm really glad to see the pendulum coming back more towards the individual learner. So I think personalized learning, I'm reminded of that by seeing the title of Fred's book here, where, you know, which he refers to transactional distance and adaptive learning. That is a really interesting phenomenon I've always been interested in, and I would like to see more what we used to call personality treatment, aptitude treatment interactions, whereby we research the characteristics of the learner that respond best to different combinations of both technology and pedagogies, which has been a kind of holy grail, in my opinion, but impossible. But now with the emergence of big data and adaptive learning technologies, the idea that you can get an optimum fit for each individual learner out of the combinations that are available is a fantastic concept and, you know, an amazing objective to go for.
Michael, the Wiedemeyer's work that you mentioned, is it available online publicly?
He wrote a book called Learning at the Back Door. He compiled a lot of his papers, his articles, into that book. So that would be one place to look. My one-time student, William Deal, associate editor of the journal, he co-edited the handbook. Under my guidance, he did his dissertation on Wiedemeyer. So I suppose doctoral dissertations would be a place to go and get Deal, D-I-E-H-L, and get his doctoral dissertation. And that's about as thorough a description of Wiedemeyer's work as you'll find, and that would be available online.
To finish the interview, Michael, two people you'd recommend as leaders of online learning.
I tell you, a guy that really did a lot, a good service for the field was Des Keegan. He did a couple of books on the theorists. So, you know, he's got Peterson, Holmberg, and myself and some others in there. And that was a great contribution. Again, I don't know how many of the people now going into the field would read Keegan's book, which is unfortunate. I mean, it should be required reading. The person that would come top of my list in response to your question, I'm very impressed by what John Dron at Athabasca University has done. I don't know if you've interviewed John or
yes, I have. Yes,
John is such a creative and original thinker about pedagogy of distance learning. And I'd like to see his work more widely known. I'd like to see where he takes us, because I think he's definitely an emerging leader in the field.
Well, Michael, it's been a very real privilege to talk with you. I've utterly enjoyed this interview. You've inspired me, actually, afresh to take a look again at the distance education heritage that I bring to my practice as well. Michael, thank you for your contribution to distance education and online education. Thank you too for your time today.
All right, Mark, thank you. I look forward to hearing what you make of it. Bye-bye now.
You can learn more about Michael and his work and find links to the various publications he mentioned from our website. That concludes this episode. Be sure to go to our website, www.onlinelearninglegends.com, to follow up on this episode's guest. You'll also find links to others whose ideas continue to inspire and teach online learning professionals, and you can subscribe to future interviews. If you know of a leader or legend we've not yet talked to, please do drop us a line at onlinelearninglegends@gmail.com.